KCAA's Inland Talk Express. KCAA, Loma Linda, 1050 AM, the station that leaves no listener behind.
NBC News Radio, I'm Melissa Rayberger. Don't ask, don't tell is history. Gay service members may now serve openly in the military. Defense Secretary Leon Panetta.
These are men and women who put their lives on the line in the defense of this country. And that's what should matter the most.
A former president of Afghanistan who was working on peace issues has been killed by a suicide bomber. NBC's Andrea Mitchell says the attacker was at a meeting with the former Afghan leader.
He was perhaps a known member of the negotiating committee and blew himself up and killed President Rabbani right in his home.
Police in Reno say an 11th person has died as a result of last weekend's air show disaster. The investigation continues. The chief economist of the International Monetary Fund says the world economy has entered a dangerous new phase. There was a small gain on Wall Street today. The Dow was up almost 8 points. I'm Melissa Rayberger, NBC News Radio.
When you're shopping for a home at Wells Fargo, we're with you. That's why we created the Wells Fargo Priority Buyer Pre-Approval. Come in, sit down, and talk with a Wells Fargo home mortgage consultant, and we'll let you know the mortgage loan range for which you could qualify. A Priority Buyer Pre-Approval is a great first step to help you start looking at homes within your price range. Wells Fargo. Together, we'll go far. A Priority Buyer Pre-Approval is not a commitment to lend. Please call for additional program details. Wells Fargo Home Mortgage is a division of Wells Fargo Bank, N.A., member FDIC, equal housing lender.
Laryngitis and public speaking don't go together. Neither do germs and doorknobs. But thanks to the Walgreens brand sale, cold tablets and bandages do. Because this week at Walgreens, you can mix, match, and save on thousands of Walgreens pharmacist-recommended Walgreens brand health and wellness products. Buy one Walgreens brand product, get one 50% off. See store or walgreens.com for details. Walgreens, there's a way. Of equal or lesser value, offer not available on products or services submitted for insurance reimbursement. Other exclusions or restrictions may apply. Void where prohibited by law.
From the KCAA Weather Center, I'm meteorologist Mary Kay. For tonight, mostly clear skies with a low around 63 degrees, with wind gusts as high as 20 miles per hour. For Wednesday, get ready for sunny skies with a high near 94 degrees. For Wednesday night, you can expect a low around 62 degrees with a west wind becoming 5 and 10 miles per hour with clear skies. For Thursday, sunny skies return with a high near 96. That's your weather forecast for this hour from the station that leaves no listener behind. NBC News Radio, AM 1050, KCAA.
Good afternoon. It's 4:03. I'm Brett Malik with this Inland Empire traffic update. And it's brought to you by the PC Rescue. The PC Rescue reminds everyone that each year, 186,000 women are diagnosed with breast cancer. Know the many risk factors and get answers about breast cancer. Call 1-800-221-2141 for information on prevention and treatment. This message courtesy of the PC Rescue at 11095 Magnolia Avenue in Riverside, where service is more than a word, it's a priority. Trust their 20 years of experience for a high-quality PC service and repair. Call Giovanni at the PC Rescue at 951-710-6910 or visit thepcrescue.com. Well, there's an issue out there in Riverside. 215 southbound before Blaine, a stalled car is blocking the second lane from the left. Traffic backed up to Barton Road. Right now, it is 93 degrees in downtown San Bernardino, right here on AM 1050.
Once upon a time, there were three little investors.
The first little investor built his portfolio with stocks.
But the big, bad economy blew his savings away.
The second little investor built his portfolio with bonds.
The big, bad economy wrecked his portfolio, too.
But the third little investor knew he needed something solid. He called the CT Group, experts in tangible assets. They showed him how rare coins, gold, and other precious metals were standing strong. They explained the different tangible asset accounts he could choose from. He called 866-909-5515, and one of their experts answered all his questions. With the help of CT Group, the third little investor weathered the big, bad economy. Gold is at an all-time high.
Find out how to capitalize on this unprecedented economic window. Call 866-909-5515. The CT Group will show you the real strength tangible assets can give your portfolio. Don't wait. Call 866-909-5515 now.
AM 1050 News Time, 4:05. It's 90 degrees in downtown San Bernardino, and this weather update is brought to you by 99 Cents Only Stores. Create your own haunted house with Halloween decorations from 99 Cents Only Stores, from spider webs, pumpkins, skulls, monsters, and more for only 99.99 cents each. We have Taking Your Business Seriously with Gary Capolino coming up next on your official University of Redlands Bulldog football station, AM 1050 and KCAAradio.com.
Redlands Blueprint and Commercial Printing Company has been serving the greater Inland Empire for over 60 years. For all of your printing needs, from full-color printing to high-speed copying and everything in between, go to Redlands Blueprint and Commercial Printing Company. Their staff is committed to your total satisfaction. Great service isn't just lip service at Redlands Blueprint and Commercial Printing Company. It's the way they do business year after year. Having trouble finding drafting supplies? Redlands Blueprint and Commercial Printing Company still carries a complete selection. Redlands Blueprint and Commercial Printing Company is rated high in customer satisfaction by ValueStar, an independent rating company. For all of your personal or business printing, call Redlands Blueprint and Commercial Printing Company at 909-792-3478. That's 792-3478, or visit them on New York Street in Redlands off the I-10 and the Crosstown Freeway.
Robert Cardoza Live, Monday through Friday at 5 p.m. Robert Cardoza Live, talking politics, money, and you. Weekdays at 5 p.m., Robert Cardoza Live, bringing together politics, money, and you. Here on KCAA 1050 AM.
This is Taking Your Business Seriously with Gary Capolino, the part-time CFO. Here now to help you take your business to the next level, the host of Taking Your Business Seriously, Gary Capolino.
This is Taking Your Business Seriously on KCAA 1050. I'm your host, Gary Capolino, the part-time CFO. Today I'm with Gary, and we're going to talk about why small businesses fail. If you have any questions relating to the subject of small business, you can call us at 888-909-1050, or you can email us through the takingyourbusinessseriously.com webpage. Okay, on the subject of why small businesses fail, I want to go back in history a little bit, back to, I guess, the 80s, or the late 70s, early 80s. There was something at the time that seemed to be a landmark study, and it was a study of small businesses and the failure of small businesses. And they arrived at a statistic that was widely accepted at the time, that 80% of all small businesses fail in the first 2 years. Now, with a statistic like that, it drew quite a bit of attention, and fortunately, a lot of follow-up research to determine why this was the case, and ultimately what the follow-up studies found was that there were probably some flaws in the data. They never really arrived at a real number, but what they found was that the criteria that was used to determine whether a business failed or not was to start off with recognizing new listings in the phone book in year one, and then in year three, 2 years later, look and see which of these listings was still in the phone book 2 years later. If they were not in the phone book 2 years later, they were deemed to be a small business failure. But the fact is, a lot of businesses don't show up in the phone book 2 years later for much different reasons than just simply because they failed. And my own business is a good example. I started off as a business selling software. I thought that was going to be the core of my market. But what I found was that people were much more interested in my abilities and my services as an accountant than any software that I could sell their business. So as a result, I became what is now the part-time CFO. And by definition, my name changed. But the fact is that in the first couple of years, I continued with the original name. It wasn't until I had found a meaningful business that I thought to change my name. But if between then and when the follow-up study came, I had changed my name from what it originally was, which was automated accounting, to the part-time CFO, they would have just classified me as another business failure. But the fact is that a lot of us, when we start a business, we think we're going to do one thing, and inevitably, once we jump into the pool as a small business, we change our definition, because what we thought it would take for us to swim in the small business pool ended up being quite different. And a lot of times we jump into the pool as a polywog, and we come out as a frog. And that's just simply adaptation to the business world. And perhaps a frog is a good example, because any of us who are familiar with frogs know that when they're born, they come out as eggs. And between the time that they're an egg and a frog, they're what a lot of people call polywogs, but the in-between being is much more analogous to a fish than it is to a frog. And those of us who can think on our feet and change our definition as we navigate through the business world, those are the ones that are successful. And in that original study, we'd be the failures. But in fact, we're thriving businesses not recognizable by our earlier form. But in either case, for that study and just in evaluating small businesses in general, a very meaningful subject is why do small businesses fail? And a lot of them do fail. But before we get into the specific reasons that businesses fail, let's just talk about what we bring to the table as a small business. Now, Gary, I'm going to ask you, as you are right now, and as much as we try not to get too hypothetical, let's just say that you were going to start a business in an area that I know that you're good at, baseball. Okay? So you know baseball up and down. But in starting a business around baseball, okay, how much marketing experience do you have?
None, really.
Okay. How much administrative experience do you have?
None, really.
Okay. How much management experience do you have?
No real hands-on other than what I've observed.
Okay. So you're a typical entrepreneur. Okay. So before we get into the reasons that businesses fail, okay, as a typical entrepreneur, we got a head start, don't we? We don't have any of the basic skills or experiences in business to start our business to be successful, okay? But the fact is, because the entrepreneur is so versatile and quick on his feet, and quick to learn and gain the tools that he needs to be successful in his business, these are usually not the reasons that he fails. Because the fact is, in marketing, you may not have a whole lot of marketing experience, but do you have connections to the people who need help in the business of baseball?
Yes.
Okay? And since the administrative management of your business comes down to managing yourself, do you think that's something you can handle?
Yeah, for the most part.
Okay. Do you know how to write a check?
Yes.
Okay. Do you know how to buy stuff?
Yeah.
Okay. And if someone comes to you and wants to buy something from you, do you know how to sell that?
Kind of.
Yeah, you probably do. Okay. It's easy when you have a seller lined up already. So we can look at a glass as half full and half empty. No, We don't have credentialed experience. But we have something that's more important than that. We have common sense, and we know how to do stuff. Okay. All right, now let's get to the next level. We're in business, and we can deal with our failures and our shortcomings. But what are the additional elements to help us fail?
Well, one of the top reasons I have always heard for failing was the company runs out of capital or money to do business.
Okay, and the reason for that is how much capital did they bring to the table?
Yeah.
Not much. Okay. All right, so what are some of the areas when we think about the cost of running a business where we might misjudge the amount of capital that's needed?
Yeah, well, when I was in an entrepreneurship class I took in college, they showed us a video of a banker giving us an example of this one guy who came to him giving a loan or asking for a loan. And the thing was, he asked for, I think it was like $5,000 for like what was rent on the building for the first month, or what he thought it was going to take for him to really get the business going. But the banker explained to him there's tons of other costs that he's not even taking into consideration that he needs to pay for before he really even starts making money. Like, there was rent for the first and the last month's rent, so he was going to actually have to pay double for rent. Then there was also the permits that he's going to have to get to actually start the business and do everything legally. And then there was to pay for the couple employees he needed to get started in his particular business. It was just a long list of things that he didn't take into consideration. And realistically, he needed a loan of somewhere around $20,000 or $30,000 rather than the $5,000 he had originally suspected.
Okay, the examples of the things that they needed was one of the things mentioned by the banker, by any chance, tenant improvements?
It might have been. I don't recall.
Okay. Do you know what tenant improvements are? Just not to embarrass you.
I would guess it was like just to make some changes to the actual building itself that actually make it able for you to do business in that particular building.
Exactly, because a lot of times you can identify a place to have your to rent space for your business, but a lot of times it's nothing more than walls, concrete, and maybe a ceiling, maybe not a ceiling. And depending on how hungry the property market is, sometimes the landlord pays for that, sometimes you pay for it. And when you pay for it, that's going to bump up the cost of getting started. Okay, the other thing that wasn't mentioned that maybe is included in the cost of employees, but you know, when you start a business, you're not working in a job anymore. You have your own job. But until your business starts producing revenue or starts producing income, you as the owner need to finance your living expenses. So the cost of getting started up is sometimes an issue of that you got to pay the cost of maintaining the owner too. Now, of course, any banker involved in the process is going to hope that the owner of a startup business doesn't live in the lap of luxury during this particular period and doesn't decide that he needs things like a new car, et cetera, et cetera. Because a bank that's financing a business is looking for a business to be successful. And before we can start enjoying the benefits of the business has to produce those benefits. And usually the bank expects to get paid first. This is Taking Your Business Seriously on KCAA 1050. I'm your host, Gary Capolino, the part-time CFO. Today I'm with Gary, and we're talking about the reasons that businesses fail. Okay? From time to time, I've mentioned a video offered on the TakingYourBusinessSeriously.com website. The video is called Taking Your Business Seriously. It's generally a primer for budding entrepreneurs, but anyone in the earlier stages of a new business can avoid a lot of the mistakes entrepreneurs make in their first business venture. It covers everything from the elements of business formation, how to choose a consultant, business planning, entity selection, payroll issues, employee relations, getting legal advice, the benefits of an accounting system, and the Capolino Rule of Six. It's about 90 minutes long, and this video is available on the TakingYourBusinessSeriously.com website. For those of you who have questions about small business, you can call us at 888-909-1050, or you can email us through the TakingYourBusinessSeriously.com website.
Attention business owners, do you want to spend more time focusing on your business and less on managing it? In these economic times, you don't need to add another full-time salary to get more effective administration. Take your business to the next level with radio host and founder of the part-time CFO, Gary Capolino, who has been serving Southern California business for over 20 years. He provides outsourced professional services you can afford. Call Gary at 951-653-5053. That's 951-653-5053 or GaryThePartTimeCFO.com.
I'm working two jobs, and my husband works, too. My kids go to school with your kids. I sit next to you at PTA meetings. We live right next door. We've been neighbors for years. You know my family and me pretty well, but here's one thing you don't know. I'm one out of every six Americans, and my family is struggling with hunger. Like you, we believe in this country. What's hard to believe is in the land of milk and honey, how many hardworking Americans have to choose between paying bills and feeding their families. This is a problem with a solution. Please visit feedingamerica.org today and find your local food bank for ways to help. Every dollar you donate helps provide 7 meals for those around you quietly struggling with hunger. Together, we're Feeding America.
Brought to you by Feeding America and the Ad Council.
This entire piece of music is played with only two instruments, a right hand and a left hand. Hands can do incredible things. But nothing compares to using them to help save a life with hands-only CPR. If an adult suddenly collapses, call 911, then push hard and fast in the center of their chest until help arrives. Hands-only CPR is recommended by the American Heart Association, and it's incredibly easy and effective. Find out more about this latest method of CPR at handsonlycpr.org. The power to help save a life is in your hands. A message from the American Heart Association and the Ad Council.
Welcome to today's lottery drawing. And today's winning numbers are not yours, not yours, and another number that's not yours. And the final number is not yours.
When it comes to having money, don't rely on luck. Brew your own coffee at home instead of buying that latte. Brown bag it to work instead of ordering it. Go to feedthepig.org for more free ideas on how to save.
Feedthepig.org.
This message brought to you by the American Institute of Certified Public Accountants and the Ad Council.
The most diversified radio station on the dial, AM 1050, KCAA.
This is...
This is Taking Your Business Seriously on KCAA 1050. I'm your host, Gary Capolino, the part-time CFO. Today I'm with Gary, and we've been talking about why small businesses fail. On that subject, okay, we talked about the lack of capital and the problem of underestimating the cost of doing business. There's also a lack of planning issue, too. The funny thing is that a lot of us, when we think about what it is that we're going to do in starting a business, we have a pretty good idea in our head of what we're going to do. But very little thought to the idea of getting to that point where we're actually doing something. Because there's a lot of setup stuff. Whatever the product or service that we're planning to deliver, okay, when somebody orders it, usually that product or service is not ready. there's a lot of setup work that needs to be done. You need to identify vendors. You need to identify how you're going to buy it. You need to line up credit lines. And a lot of times when you get that first order, none of this stuff is set up. Okay, something that I cover in the Taking Your Business Seriously video is the idea that somebody wants to buy something that you're going to sell, and you ask them for 50% up front. And the reason you want that 50% up front is because you don't have the credit lines or the vendor relationships to finance the production of what you're selling. But a lot of times, the same time that you're asking him for that check, you have to tell him not to make it in the name of your business, but to put it in your name personally. And the reason for that usually is because you don't have a bank account set up yet, okay? Which is kind of embarrassing if that happens. But for the person who's going to write the check, he has to ask himself at that moment, is this guy going to deliver the goods, or is he going to take the money and run? Because presumably, he thought he was dealing with a serious businessman. And if you don't have the time to set up a bank account for your serious business, maybe you don't have such a serious business. But that's a good example of the lack of planning. And a lot of times, the banking people or the small business administration people, when they think about financing you, the first thing that they think about is, do you have a business plan? Okay. And a lot of times, that turns into another barrier to getting capital, which is what, Gary?
That would be your unableness to really prepare the like financial statements or things like that to actually let you know how you're doing.
That's right. Okay, so you can't access capital from the banker because you don't have financial statements. Okay, now granted, when you just started a business, what financial statements would you have?
Well, you would have, well, they should start at zero, but if you're not staying on top of them, you don't have anything.
Right, okay, but when you start a business, sometimes you'll go to an accountant and have him put together some projections that incorporate what your expectations are and what your plans are. Okay. Now, a lot of times this particular process can be very meaningful because it will help you with the questions that the accountant might ask you. It'll help you to get a grasp of some of the things that you're going to spend money on. Okay. The banker that Gary was talking about, when somebody came to him and asked for $5,000, and the banker eventually, working with him, realized that you need $25,000 or $30,000. Okay. Now, granted, it's a real helpful banker that is going to do that. And obviously he wants to help you, and most people in the lending industry want to help you. But at the same time, if you show up to that banker and have that personal financial statement which tells about your personal assets, and it also tells about what you're expecting your business to do, okay, that banker is going to be kind of impressed. Now, this guy is a serious businessman, and he knows what he's doing, or at least he has an idea of what he's going to do. And, of course, the other problem, which we've covered really, is the fact that even when you're asking for money, you're not asking for enough money. Now, what's the worst thing that the banker can worry about when he's going to lend you money?
That you're not going to pay back the loan at all, that you're going to go possibly bankrupt you actually succeed.
And that really is the first thing that he's worried about. What's the second thing? This is what I was thinking of.
That you're going to need to come back and borrow more money, Fred?
Exactly, yeah. I'm really excited about my business, and we're really doing well, except I just ran out of money. Okay, so now the banker has to ask himself, am I throwing good money after bad money, or is this a viable business, and can the injection of a little bit more money get us there? But, you know, the fact is that a lot of times when you borrow $25,000 to get started and you come back asking for more money, how much money are you usually asking for?
Another $25,000.
Probably. That's one of my my personal rules, that usually when you think you know how much money you need twice as much. All right, now let's get past the issue of lack of capital, and let's talk about some of the other things that cause business failures.
Well, one example I think of is a bad location. An example I have is there was a small Italian restaurant that opened up business three or four years ago, and it was a really good place. The quality was great, the prices were pretty good, and everything about it was just a good place to go to eat for lunch, dinner, anytime. But one of the things you have to look at these locations is the rent. The rent was very high, and it was at a place where you actually looked at to rent an office space there earlier, 10 years ago, but the rent there was just excessive. It's a good location, but the actual location in that location, the shopping center, I mean, it was kind of out of sight from the normal person who goes to shop there. It was just kind of in the back, hidden, and then it was just low traffic. Nobody would really see it for the amount that you're paying for it. And then another problem with it was the small Italian restaurant was in the same, right across the street from it, was an Olive Garden. So there's just a huge competitor right across the street from that he's going to have to compete with right away when he's really in that hard beginning stages of owning a business where he's going to have to try and make as much money as possible. But he has a well-established location of a competitor right across the street.
Right, and that was an Italian restaurant competing with the Olive Garden, another Italian restaurant. But in that same area, what other restaurants existed?
There was a Red Robin, a Chili's, a Outback. There was everything.
That's right. That's right. And the thing that all those different places that you talk about, what do they have that this little restaurant didn't have?
They have a stream of steady customers. They have all marketing from a huge corporation.
So they're a recognizable name. And you have this place in the back of the shopping center where nobody can really see them. And even if they can see him, they have an unrecognizable name. Okay, now, the thing that we saw, because we were customers of that particular place, was the food was great. In fact, I have a client that has another Italian restaurant, and the first thing I did was invited him to come and try the food over there. Because he could learn from it, and I was also, from my own view, thinking that this guy probably wasn't going to make it and hoping that maybe there could be some kind of an opportunity between these two. If you take the one guy's location and the other guy's cooking and the other guy's years of success, conceivably they could have done something. But do you remember what I used to talk about when we were there?
The quality?
No, we always talked about the quality. But the thing that I always talked about in terms of the success of the place was I was convinced, aside from the rent, that he probably didn't have enough capital to survive. Okay? The problem is, for all the things that are usually up against a startup enterprise, okay, you don't have the regular customers. And my view was that just from different things that I could see, like paper plates and plastic silverware, he probably didn't have very much capital. So the clock was going to tick very quickly on him, I thought. Okay, but he also did some other things that were kind of elaborate, and maybe they were friends, and maybe he didn't pay a whole lot for it. But from the view of an accountant, I thought this could be awfully expensive. What was that?
The murals inside the restaurant?
That's right. Again, this guy knew exactly what he wanted to do, but until he had the customers, he couldn't pay for it. That was just a very good example of a restaurant that still brings a tear to my eye that it didn't survive. Because with my own background as an Italian, there's nothing more that I like than down-home Italian cooking. All right, now another thing that can frequently trip up a startup business is what?
Bad accounting or no accounting.
And that's really what you get to, is no accounting. Everything is by the seat of your pants. And the fact is that when you start a business, you don't need an accountant to tell you how you're doing. You can see, okay? But when you start realizing some success, okay, There are a number of things that can happen. My favorite one is that your successful business turns you into an accountant, and you spend more time doing the books than managing the business, and doing the books ends up being something that you're not really good at. Okay? But if you've borrowed money from the bank, guess what the bank expects on a periodic basis?
They expect you to let them know how you're doing.
And how do you communicate that to them?
Financial statements.
That's right. Just tell them, oh, yeah, we're doing great. That's not going to get you there. Okay? But the other thing is that as a small business owner, you don't necessarily know how much it costs to do what you're doing. Your only measure is how much money you have in the bank. And after you make your deposit, if you're doing it regularly, you're getting a good pulse. But a lot of people don't have time to go to the bank every day. So at the end of the week, they got this huge bucket of money that they finally take to the bank. And ultimately, they got money in the account. Of course, if you're allowing money to collect, what does that subject you to?
Taxes.
Well, how about loss or theft? You'll get to the taxes later. In fact, that's further down the list here. Okay, but it lends itself to poor internal control. Okay, internal control provides two things. One is accurate financial accounting, which helps you to know how much money you're making. But poor internal control lends itself to theft and malfeasance. Okay, if money is laying around and people can see it, that money will disappear. Okay, if the owner is not putting the money in the bank right away, okay, he can use it for other things, and or he can put it in the bank. And sometimes when he needs to buy stuff, he quickly takes the money out of the bucket of cash. He may buy it for legitimate business things, but if he's paying cash for it, he don't necessarily have the documented receipts that he needs. Okay, and if you don't know your expenses, then you can't anticipate your cash needs. Okay, and the last thing that I like to point at that can knock over a business or kill most businesses is self-employment tax. This is something that very few people understand until they're no longer in business or until it puts them out of business. But the problem with self-employment tax and what it is for those who are new to the area, self-employment tax is the equivalent of Social Security tax. Now, when you work for somebody, half of it comes out of your paycheck, and the employer pays the other half. Okay? When you're self-employed, you aren't getting regular paychecks, and therefore, you aren't subject to it. But the IRS expects you to pay it at the end of the year. In fact, they expect you to pay it in quarterly installments. But since you don't know about it, and chances are because you don't have an accountant, nobody's telling you that you're going to have to pay this. And it amounts to 15.3% of your profits. Okay? And if you have a good year and, say, make the $30,000 or so that a person needs to live on at the lower level, okay, you're just barely surviving. And when your accountant does your taxes, you find out that you owe 15% of that $30,000. Okay? And that's $6,000. Okay? $4,500. Okay? And that's a lot of money for the guy that's living hand to mouth. Okay? And eventually, that'll put you out of business if you don't find a way to deal with that. Anyway, and it comes as a big surprise. Okay, this is Taking Your Business Seriously on KCAA 1050. I'm your host, Gary Capolino, the part-time CFO. I'm here with Gary, and we've been talking about why small businesses fail. When we return, we'll be talking about crash and burn strategies, what you do when you think you're going to fail. If you have any questions relating to the subject of small business, you can call us at 888-909-1050, or you can email us through the TakingYourBusinessSeriously.com webpage. We'll be right back.
Attention business owners, do you want to spend more time focusing on your business and less on managing it? In these economic times, you don't need to add another full-time salary to get more effective administration. Take your business to the next level with radio host and founder of the Part-Time CFO, Gary Capolino, who has been serving Southern California business for over 20 years. He provides outsourced professional services you can afford. Call Gary at 951-653-5053. That's 951-653-5053 or GaryThePartTimeCFO.com.
My name is Ruth Rusi, and this is how I live United. I read to children as part of United Way's education program. It helps them create links between language and literacy and prepares them for a better academic future. I figure I have the time and they have the need. My name is Ruth Rusi. I help kids prepare to succeed in school. So I don't just wear the shirt, I live it.
Give, advocate, volunteer. Live United. Go to liveunited.org. Brought to you by United Way and the Ad Council.
This week's episode, Rattlesnake at the Pond.
Oh, Johnny, skipping rocks at the pond sure is fun.
Hey, look, a moving stick.
That ain't a stick. That's a rattlesnake.
Sassy, we're in danger.
Good idea, Sassy. Go get Mr. Gunderson. You will in a second, but first you'd like to tell us something we may not know about animal shelters in the United States?
It's getting close, Sassy.
Approximately 8 million pets enter shelters each year? The majority of which are in shelters because of owner-related issues that the animals have no control over?
Sassy the rattlesnake! Save us, Sassy!
What, Sassy? You wish you were videotaping this? Sassy!
Sassy is brought to you by the Ad Council and the ShelterPetProject.org. Remember, adopt!
My name is Joe Thompson. I'm 29 years old and I have a career that I love as a systems analyst. Career. It still sounds cool to say that word. I never could have gotten on this path without a college degree. And if the college me were here, he'd tell you.
I never would have gotten to college without big brothers, big sisters. I could have ended up anywhere, on the streets even. But college? Joe Thompson? Not likely. My big brother helped me out. He taught me I could do anything. At a time when a lot of people were saying just the opposite.
And to a 7-year-old, that means a lot. My big brother's name is Phil. And Phil is the reason that this 7-year-old grows up to be a systems analyst.
Whether you donate money or time, you're helping big brothers, big sisters help a child. And that can last a lifetime. Start something today at bigbrothersbigsisters.org. Brought to you by Big Brothers Big Sisters and the Ad Council.
NBC Radio News is KCAA News Talk 1050, the Inland Talk Express.
They say I'm crazy, but I have a good time. Life's been good to me so long.
This is Taking Your Business Seriously on KCAA 1050. I'm your host, Gary Capolino, the part-time CFO. Today I'm with Gary, and we've been talking about why small businesses fail. And we're about to get to a favorite subject of mine, what I call crash and burn strategies. Okay, but before I get to that, on the break we were talking about the issues of understanding your costs as an entrepreneur. And the best example not necessarily the best example, but the point here is that when you're dealing with an accountant or somebody who has experience in your business and is conscious of the normal ratios, that can help you a lot. Because when you're doing it for the first time, you can have a hamburger that costs about 25 cents in meat. And you can be real happy because the buns really don't cost a whole lot. And you can be real happy to sell that 25 cents of meat for 50 cents. But the fact is that there's a lot of other costs that you're not taking into consideration, including that bun that doesn't really cost much. Okay? Because you also have the person that's flipping that hamburger. And the funny thing about employees that are involved in the production of food is you're paying them whether they're cooking food or not. And a lot of times in determining what what the costs should be in order that you can make a profit, you rely on what you would call industry established ratios. Because when you have a restaurant and you're serving food, okay, you may be open from 7 in the morning until 7 at night or 9 at night. Okay, but there are periods of time when you're cooking, and there are periods of time when you're not. There are times when there are customers, there are times when there aren't. Okay, and as a result, the cost of your product has to incorporate the active periods and the inactive periods. Plus, you have to recognize all the elements that go directly into the production of that product. Now, in the food industry, my experience working for some of the larger companies was that they expected the food cost to be approximately 30%. They also expected the labor cost to be about 30%. And then there was overhead, and the rest was profit. Okay, the overhead ratios and the profit was a function of volume. But the fact is that that's a good benchmark. So if we sit here thinking that I have a 25-cent piece of meat that I can sell for 50 cents, that sounds great on paper. But talk to your accountant, and you may come away with a different view. Okay, now back to the crash and burn strategies. Now, the crash and burn strategies is a philosophy or an approach that requires that you start to get the impression that this business isn't going to work. Now, in business failure, the idea is if you think you have a good idea, you generally stay with the idea. But sometimes you have to leave the business. Now, there's three scenarios here. One is total failure. A total failure just simply means that you've incurred a lot of debt, you got nothing to show for it, and this is just the worst idea of your life. And as a result, there's very little that you can take away from that business except the bruises and the experience that might make you a little bit smarter and a little bit more successful the next time. Okay, but the other two options are to have financial failure, meaning that you ran out of money. But otherwise, it's a pretty good business model that you need a little bit more capital for. And the third option is where you have a market failure, meaning for the most part, you probably ran out of money too, but sometimes you don't run out of money. You just suddenly realize that this wasn't the great idea that you thought it was, and you cut your losses. You effectively fold the business, you take what money is left of it, and you take the assets that you have in it and try to get as much for those assets as you can. And the best example would be, say, an automotive repair facility that's gone out of business because he didn't get any customers. He thought it was a great idea that he was a good mechanic, and he failed in the process of communicating and finding the customers that recognized him for being a good accountant and wanting him to fix his car. So he gave up, all right? But he still got all those tools, and those tools have value. Now, he could take those tools to the next business, whether it's a job that he takes or maybe he goes into a partnership with somebody that's got a better business. But he's got the tools. Maybe he has loyal employees that he wants to take with him to whatever the next thing that he does is going to be. Maybe he's got vendor relationships. All these things could be meaningful elements in another successful business. This just wasn't the one. Okay, but in the business failure, he collects all the good thing he has to take to the next business venture. Now, that could be a partnership with somebody else. He could be an employee that's got all these things that could help his next employer. And, of course, this is a benefit to the employees that were with him, that now they have a job and they can build on his network and his success. All right, but in between all this is where we have the financial failure and but a viable business. And a lot of times the approach is that we are going to take this business and start over again. But since we have no money, what's the first thing that we need to do?
Get more money.
Okay. So how do we get more money?
You can maybe make some sacrifices from your personal assets, like a move out of a bigger house, get a smaller house, or sell your expensive car for a basic car, or you can go to a relative to get money or a bank and try and get another loan, just different things like that.
Okay, and of course there's the one avenue that none of us entrepreneurs are terribly anxious for, and I can tell you're thinking like an entrepreneur because it doesn't even come to mind, but you could get a job. And in getting a job, you also solve the first problem of feeding the family or feeding yourself and keeping a roof over your head. Okay? But you also touched on something that is extremely meaningful. Not as meaningful now as it was during the housing boom about 10 years ago. And there was a person that I gave some advice to at that time, that he had a business that he was excited about, in the sense that he was making money and he was doing well, but he wasn't doing enough business because he didn't have the capacity to do more. And I suggested to him, well, these days everybody's running around with an easy $100,000 of equity in their house. And I'm not saying put your whole house on the line, but why don't you take a home equity loan and just take $10,000 to get yourself a location and see if you can't make the conversion for moving to your house and getting enough volume to carry that extra space that you've just gotten to, and build your business into something new. Well, when your business fails, sometimes that's the reason that it failed, was that you weren't big enough to be successful. And the answer to this is obtaining more capital. Okay, so as you pointed out, there's the equity in the house. Maybe you're driving too big a car, or maybe that truck that you bought outright when you started, since the business ain't working, you sell the truck and get what money you can out of it. Okay, and the next time around, because of the value of cash flow, instead of buying the truck outright, you're going to finance it and keep that capital in the company and pay for the truck over the period of its use instead of up front. Okay? Financing, if you didn't pay back your last loan, sometimes the financing industry is a little bit more hesitant to get into it. But there are venture capitalists. There are also people who knew your business, liked it, thought it had potential, saw you go out of business, wanted you to keep on going on because they needed you. Well, now suddenly they're willing to approach you as a business partner. Now, the things that you want to save when you're approaching your financial failure are the things that you'll need if you continue the business. For instance, your marketing materials. Most important, although not as important these days, but still very important, because when we need to reach somebody that we haven't spoken to for a long time, what's the usual avenue that we communicate through?
By phone.
That's right. So you don't lose that business phone line. You keep that until everything else is gone. Okay? And these days, your email address may be just as important. Now, something that may not be known to everybody around me, the people that I do business, but I still work through a email address, autoacc@earthlink.net. Okay? But these days, on the radio in particular, you hear me promoting Gary at TakingYourBusinessSeriously.com, and other people know me promoting myself as Gary at GaryThePartTimeCFO.com. All these emails go to the same place, okay? And that's how I keep in touch with anybody that ever got my email address, okay? And that's a very valuable thing. I'm not planning on failing. But nonetheless, if I were failing, these are the two things I would never want to lose. Okay? Now, if you have a customer list, you keep that customer list. Because if you're going out of business, those customers are your key to future success. Same thing with employees. If you go out of business, your employees may find other jobs. But you'd be surprised how many of them want to come back and work with you if you decide to do this again. Okay, and the other thing is maintaining a functional office and a presence. Okay, I mentioned in some of the earlier shows about it takes 3 to 5 years before you reach a level of success in your business. And if you don't stay with the business with all of your time, that time clock doesn't tick. But when you have to put down your business may not grow while you've taken a real job or spent some time deciding what you're going to do. But you may not be losing as much as you think. So maintaining that functional office presence allows you to cultivate these relationships during the period of time when you are, so to speak, not in business. But at the same time, it stands ready as a springboard for you to jump back into the game, to jump back into the pool and pick up that business one more time. Okay, a lot of times when our business is not performing as it would, a lot of us are slow to recognize that we could be failing here and to start making preparations for that. And a lot of times the best approach is to steadfastly stay with it. And I had a conversation with a client of mine years back, and the thing that impressed me more than anything else, I was explaining to them that you need to figure out what you want to keep and what you don't want to keep. And they were so steadfast that we are not going to let this business fail. And the fact is, for all the hardship involved, that business to this day continues to function. Okay? And the most important elements are the reason that they have remained successful or have remained in business. I'm not sure we can paint them as a successful business yet. But that steadfastness sometimes can be our worst enemy. Now, fortunately, that particular business has found ways and has been very creative in the ways that it's used to keep its access to its customers, its market, and its capital. And they've changed locations several times, and their customers keep on finding them. So it speaks to the entrepreneurial spirit. But the idea is that a lot of us never want to say never. And the reason we never want to say never is because we like this. And one of the things that I enjoy most in my business is the fact that I'm not burdened by the limitations of an employer. I have no limit. I can do what I need to do. Okay? And so when I see my business, or when any of us see our business is not performing at the level that it needs to perform in order to continue, okay, that's when we start hiding the assets under the carpet. Now, granted, my business is a service business, so there aren't a whole lot of assets. But that phone line is gold. That email address is just as important. And while a lot of people find me these days through my personal phone line, okay, the email these days is becoming much more permanent than a landline. And that's something for people to remember. Okay, this is Taking Your Business Seriously on KCAA 1050. I'm your host, Gary Capolino, the part-time CFO. I've been here with Gary, and we've been talking about why small businesses fail, and then we've talked about some crash and burn strategies. Okay. Next week, we're going to change our format a little bit. We're going to have a special guest, Jerem Renfelt of JR Technologies, and he's going to tell us a little bit about his trips and falls in building a business and some of the entrepreneurial ventures that he's pursued. So we look forward to you next week. In the meantime, if you have any questions that you'd like us to answer on our show, you can email us at takingyourbusinessseriously.com. Or again, you can call us during our radio show at area code 888-909-1050. We'll see you next week. Thank you.
KCAA's Inland Talk Express. KCAA, Loma Linda, 1050 AM, the station that leaves no listener behind.
NBC News Radio, this is Superstation KCAA in Loma Linda with your 5 o'clock local news. Here's what's happening. First off, by way of update, one of two truck mishaps that crimped traffic on two mountain highways today may keep one closed until Thursday. Caltrans says Route 38 above Angeles Oaks is still closed at this hour. A tanker overturned, spilling 9,000 gallons of fuel. A turnout in the highway is being repaired. Motorists are encouraged to divert to Highways 18 and 330. Over in the Cajon Pass, all lanes of the southbound I-15 were reopened this afternoon, more than 12 hours after a truck fire. In that same area, a motorcyclist killed this morning in the Cajon Pass has been identified as Keith Westhaver. The 28-year-old man from Wildomar crashed into an SUV that made a sudden U-turn in front of him on Highway 138. African Americans make up about 6% of Riverside County's population, but they account for 15% of all assault and homicide victims over the past decade. That's according to a first-of-its-kind study of trauma by the County Health Department. Among the findings in the 47-page report, vehicle accidents accounted for 70% of all trauma cases. The latest Anderson economic forecast out of UCLA leaves California and much of the nation in the doldrums. Virtually no job growth is likely through next year, with California's jobless rate around 12%. Forecast predicts continued high unemployment across our Inland Empire as well for the next 5 years. Senior economist John Husing, who's based in Redlands, says blue-collar sectors are the bedrock of the Southland's economy.
One is logistics related to the ports of Long Beach and L.A. It's coming back. So that'll be a positive for us. Manufacturing, though the manufacturers keep saying they're feeling good,